What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always. I appreciate it. First things first, this is where I'm going to do about, I'm going to give myself about 5 minutes, because I'm feeling talkative, 5 minutes of self-advertisement. For the weekly listeners, if you're tuning in to hear about this week's guest, West Period, and you don't want to listen to me, a perfect stranger, emphasis on the perfect, talk about himself and his show, then fucking fast forward and be an asshole. But if you want the full experience, you're gonna listen to everything. All right, guys, go to patreon.com, patreon.com/kindaneat. And help keep us afloat by pledging per episode. Why do we do it per episode? Because sometimes I'm lazy and I can't do 4 episodes a month. I just can't. I try. I don't have enough hands. So to save you guys money to not charge by the month, where some months you don't get any episodes, I do it by the episode. So that way, every time an episode comes out, you just get a dollar taken out of your bank account. People say, hey, Lee, if I sign up, does that mean I'm going to get charged for every episode that's ever aired? No, you are not going to get charged $135. You're only going to get charged for the new episodes after you've signed up. All right. And what benefits do you get? I'm going to be honest. You don't get any fucking benefits other than just being a good human. You know what? Being a good human is like pissing your pants when you're wearing black. It's going to make you warm. And no one's going to notice except for you. So that's the benefit that you get, is you get to feel like a good person and no one else is going to know it. But Ben and I appreciate it. We have some new pledges this month. So shout out to Neil Cato. Shout out to Kevin Jesuit. Shout out to Jordan Michelle. I know Jordan Michelle. She is an old school fan as well. Big shout outs to Jordan. Shout out to Josh Cox. Loik QRT. Loik Kurt. I don't know. And Patrick Morris, I appreciate you guys for becoming Patreon pledgers. We're very grateful for it. And that's it. Now, if this is your first episode and you feel like, I don't want to give this guy money every time, that's fine. I understand. I wouldn't want to either. But I'll tell you this. If you've been listening, if this is part of your daily routine, you should do it just to be a nice person. If you don't want to do Patreon because you don't have a regular bank account, which is what some people have been telling me, like, Lee, I don't have a regular bank account. I'm in the black market. Can I give you money with cryptocurrency? I say, look, that's a very hot topic right now and is very obnoxious and you shouldn't talk about it at parties. But if you want to donate some Bitcoin, I'll put my wallet, I'll put my wallet in the description of the video, and you feel free to do that as well, because we are out here accepting Bitcoin because it's motherfucking 2017 and people are desperate to find a future because this podcast ain't paying a pension. That's for goddamn sure. All right, guys, that's the end of my pitch. Thank you so much. I'm sounding like I'm in a good mood right now, and I probably am in a good mood. And you know what? I just got back right now from visiting my dad, and that has become, like, I guess, sort of my new drug of choice. It is, I would call it a healthy addiction, but yeah, I'm finding, like I've spoken about previously, a lot of catharsis in visiting my dad, and later on this week, I have, like, a 3-day job I'm going to be working, so I had to kind of bang out a visit in between sets. When I say in between sets, what happened today is, like, we recorded this podcast earlier in the day, and then I ended up having to come back at 9 at night because the Santa Ana winds blew in today and it knocked out the power of the whole block. So the studio lost power for about 3 hours, and it was right in the middle of the first take that West Period was doing of his live performance. So we had to adjourn for the day and come back later when we all had time. So in the middle of all that, I ran to the valley and visited the big homie Barry, and now I'm back. And it's been a long week with him because we had to go to the ER the other day because they just wanted to do some tests and stuff. Like, his pulse had been a little slow, et cetera, et cetera. So I spent fucking like 7 hours with him in the ER and had to arm wrestle a few people to get him a safe ride back, because I guess folks were assuming that I was going to drive him back. And, like, sorry, but getting a 6'7", 180-pound man that is no longer responsive to verbal commands and is often aggressive to physical commands is like not going to happen. He's not going to get into a Honda Civic. So thankfully we were able to arrange a safe ride back. And after a few days and some antibiotics, he seems to be back to normal and doing well. And today was really funny. Like, if you guys follow me on various Instagram or Twitter or other social medias, you'll see some insight into what I've been going through with it. But one thing that I have noticed about Barry is throughout it all, like as he's losing all of his capacities in literally every sense, the thing that has remained most constant is like when he's in a good mood, he'll still try to be funny and he'll still laugh at a good, like, you know, dirty joke or like just cuss words. Or like if I give him the middle finger, he laughs at that. Like he still has a good sense of humor throughout it all. And he was always kind of a smart ass in his normal life. So I don't know. It's just kind of cool. Little things like that. Pretty interesting. Yeah, other than going to visit my dad all the time, which is like all that I feel like I'm doing lately, I'm also like super domesticated now. As you guys know, my girl and I moved in together, and this is our first Christmas together in a shared household. And so over the weekend, we got a Christmas tree, and your boy has been just Christmas shopaholic. I got her mad gifts, and like they're all wrapped by me. I'm just killing the rap game in a new aspect, you know, in a new sense of the term. And I would have never thought that I would, like, I don't know, like, for the longest, just avoided anything that I would deem as, like, boring or basic, quote unquote, or average or whatever. Adult things. I shied away from adult things, adult relationships, adult responsibilities, kids, all of these things. I shied away from them so long because I was hypnotized by this dream of being a musician and, you know, leading a cool life. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to like go out and fucking drink and do my drugs and all the irresponsible fun things. And man, I'll tell you, I am so fucking over that shit. It is crazy. I don't know what clicked in my head, but like I find sitting at home on a Saturday night watching fucking Netflix with my girl to be so much more fun and appealing than anything else that I could possibly be doing right now. And I never would have guessed. And a bunch of my friends are making fun of me because I was like I posted a picture of the Christmas tree on Instagram. And, you know, I had one of my buddies that I used to party with was like, oh, the day intuition became basic. And I was kind of like, man, I feel bad that you're like out at the bars, bro. Like, fuck, that shit sucks. I don't know. You hit a certain point in your life and it just seems miserable. But who am I to judge? And if you're still out on that scene, yo, have your fun, because I certainly did too. But I can tell you that right now I'm feeling very satisfied in my life, which I keep talking about every podcast, but I don't know what the fuck it is, but I'm feeling like hella good lately. And I talk about it a little bit on this podcast, but I think it's because I've just come to this new place that's sort of a modified version of nihilism, right? Where like not nihilism in a sense where like nothing matters and it doesn't matter, so I'm gonna be evil, but like on some nothing matters, so like everything's tight. You know what I mean? Like I'm like, oh, no one's gonna remember anybody, and creating a legacy is no longer important to me, and I'm just so satisfied with every little creative output thing because I don't think anything matters and everything's so forgettable and replaceable now that like somehow that is comforting to me. And I know that probably doesn't make sense and that sounds depressing or miserable, but for some reason I find a lot of comfort and satisfaction in the fact that no matter how hard anyone works, we're all gonna die with nothing. I don't know what it is about watching my dad die that has made everything else seems so pointless that it is actually counterintuitively comforting. The fact that he worked hard his whole life and the fact that everyone, you know, everyone works for everything, and you waste so much time of your life worried about shit, about your next paycheck or about your credit score or putting away for college or saving for whatever the fuck. And it's like, man, when it all comes down, if you die tomorrow, all that shit that you did was for naught, you know? And so, I don't know, man. Something about that has kind of just given me a new outlook of like, man, do what you can and don't worry about it. do what you can and feel good about it. Like I said, maybe as negative or as nihilistic or hopeless as that sounds, for some reason, it's like reinvigorated my creative drive and it's re-inspired my, I don't know, like my level of even keelness is a little higher than it usually is. So yeah, I'll tell you, I would never wish what my dad's going through on my worst enemy, but watching him go through it has given me, like I said, a new little boost, a new little like, okay, yeah. It's like giving me a second chance at satisfaction. Like, okay, I don't have that much time. No one has that much time. So you better fucking enjoy it while you're here. And trying to fill the void, which I also talk about with Wes in this podcast, the void, which I think I talked about Mike Eagle with, like everything that we're all doing, it's all to fill this void within us, this emptiness, this one human constant of like, why? Why do I wake up every morning? Why do I do what I do? Like, what is the meaning? You know, what is the meaning of life? The ever pressing question. That void that you're trying to fill, and whether you fill it with like working hard or wanting to be famous or wanting to make stuff or wanting to make money or wanting to drink or do drugs or whatever the fuck, whatever you're filling that void with, it's not going to fill. And coming to that realization, as well as like slowly watching my father fade away in front of me, it, just acknowledging that void and acknowledging there is no filling it, it's really helping me put things into perspective, and it's helping me with all of my relationships. And I know this sounds like a rambling mess of an intro, I'm sure. But all of that is to say, like, whatever it takes, man, whatever it takes to just be happy, that's what you should be striving for. Try to be happy instead of trying to get stuff. Because all that stuff isn't going to make you happy. You're going to get that stuff and you're still going to feel like shit. And I think even coming to realize that, it helps with the satisfaction. So, yeah, man. I think that the other day in the shower when I was like coming up with the point of this intro, it was probably a little more sensical in my head. But now that I'm trudging through it, I can see that it still needs some work trying to conceptualize what it is the fuck that I'm talking about. But we'll get there. We're going to figure it out in the philosophy of Lee and the philosophy of life. But yeah, man, shit's cool. Wes Period is our guest today. I like Wes. I was trying to figure out when he got here why I knew his name. Like, beyond the song that he performs, Big Bag, which I really enjoy, and I don't think it's getting the shine that it deserves yet, because in my heart of hearts, it's a smash. Like, it gets stuck in my head, and I catch myself singing it around the house. So beyond that, he looked really familiar, and his name sounded familiar, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And then come to find out, it's because back when Tommy Genesis was a guest on the show last year or the year before, I can't remember, they all blend together. But when she was a guest on the show, she showed me pictures of some people that she was working with, and it turns out that one of them was Wes. And yeah, he's a very excited and happy dude, and it's contagious. Like, he has a very contagious energy. He has a certain star quality to him that not a lot of people that walk through the or not that a lot of people that walk through the door don't have it, but he has a very specific kind of star quality that like you can pick up on. You know what I mean? Like, he's a magnetic person. And our conversation really goes someplace towards the end. I felt like we really tapped into something, and you know, sometimes you have these conversations that are like bonding experiences on this show, and whether it's real or not, for the moment and for the day, they seem that way. And today was a very real day where we had a real experience, and I hope big things come to this dude because I'm rooting for him now. So without further ado, after that borderline nonsensical rant, I'm going to get right into our interview with Wes Period here on Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. Wes Period, here you are.
Hey.
Sitting right across from me.
What's up?
I don't know. What is up? You have a project out now? Are you
I have a couple
on
singles. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm working singles on a project. Yeah. So we're dropping that in January.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty excited. It's going to be dope. So Pretty Words EP.
Pretty Words EP.
Yeah.
Okay. And here you are, pretty in pink, and your Pink Panther jacket
today.
Yeah,
perfect 10. A perfect
10.
You know.
So, Wes, who are you? Tell me about yourself. Where are you from?
Oh, man. From La Habra, California. Mm-hmm. I'm just a weird kid. Grew up in La Habra. Love hip hop.
That's Orange County, yeah?
Yeah. So it's strange.
Yeah.
Going to high school is like, I had this vision of, like, remember when we were kids, there was, like, all these shows about, like, performance arts high schools and stuff like that, where it's, like, the kid would go and, like, click up with their friends.
Yeah.
And, like, so that was, like, my idea of high school.
Yeah.
So I was, like, okay, when I get to high school, I'm going to meet the dopest rap clique, and we're all about to do this shit.
Yeah.
And then I pulled up to high school and was, like, oh, it's the same kids I went to junior high with.
Right.
And, like, There's nobody making hip hop or really into it. So I ended up linking up with like the punk kids, hardcore kids.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, from the outside, like if you're just a straight hip hop head the whole life, your whole life, anybody who looks like they're into rock is a punker, especially in that time.
Right.
So I was like, oh, fuck, like what's up with these punker kids? Like they're yelling at everybody walking across. But it was hella confusing because they would be yelling at kids, other punkers at the time to me, and they'd be like, punk is dead. I'm like, who are these kids, right? So later I find out they're hardcore kids.
Right, okay.
Research the difference if y'all don't know. But it's like, right, so I link up with them, and I start rapping over, like, breakdowns and, like, pop punk shit. And so that's kind of how I came up in high school. I was in this band called Close But Not Quite.
Okay.
We would play at Chain Reaction, like, every weekend.
Yeah.
So, like, Orange County knows me from being the kid passing them out flyers.
Okay.
Passing flyers out forever, doing that thing. And that's kind of how I got into, like, the game. I started playing shows early, so.
That, and was that to, like, avoid the Orange County Young Republicans or what?
Bro, that shit is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, my parents are Democrats, whatever.
Yeah.
But it would be crazy because I would go to school and there's so many fucking Republicans, bro.
Yeah, Orange County is like one of the few Republican red areas
stronghold
of California.
It's a fucking weird place.
Right.
A lot of people co-sign it. I mean, I love La Habra for the weird quirks of like where I'm from and stuff. It's a strange place, man. I can't really back a lot of this shit down there.
Yeah. How did your folks end up in Orange County? Are you born and bred there in La Habra?
I was born in La Mirada, so next door, basically.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So my dad's from Louisiana originally. He was born down there. He's hella old. My dad's 70. Shout
out. Is he Creole?
Creole, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Because
you have
Creole,
like an interesting ethnically ambiguous look.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So my dad's Creole. I mean, it was like the Jim Crow South at the time. My dad's 70, so he was born by a midwife, like all the way, man. And then when he was 18, he moved out to California, like my grandma moved, and got out of the South and started a new life. And then somehow he wiggled down to L.A. My dad got drafted to Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
Insane.
Yeah.
He came back, was in L.A. at that time, met my mom, and they did the thing. They met
What's
at
your
a
mom
bank.
Like?
My mom is, you know, the sweetest, like, most quintessential white mom ever.
Yeah.
Just, like, we would have the, like, my house was the house all the homies would come through after school. Like, I always had the studio at my spot. We were always recording there, hanging out. My band would practice there.
Yeah.
So my mom is just, she's a sweetheart. She grew up in Montebello.
Okay.
So she's, like, a SoCal girl.
Yeah.
And so
did
I think
she work?
Yeah, totally. My whole life. So she worked wholesale for Sprint. She was a project manager.
Okay.
So she, like, basically, besides doing cell phones, Sprint puts together large networks for companies. So the Gap may need a network, right, for all of their stores to, like, communicate with each other.
Right.
My mom sets that up. Like, she runs the programs to set that up. So
okay.
She's really smart. She did it without a college degree.
Okay.
So, like, shout out to my mom for, like, doing her fucking thing.
And then what did dad do?
My dad is a media buyer.
Okay.
So basically what that is TV shows have a certain amount of time
for
advertisement.
Yeah.
So it's like my dad will link with a car, like a car renter who just needs a 15-second commercial like one time, you know, and he'll go out and find like KCAL 9 will give you like 15-second spot for
this
however
much
money.
Right.
So he's kind of like the middleman for that.
Wow.
So both of my parents are like, you know, either one of them graduated college. They're just grinders.
Right.
And like the dopest, like, examples to look up to ever. They got divorced when I was really young, but they were, like, but, I mean, as far as just, like, examples of people and the way to live, they're incredible.
Did that make you kind of a latchkey kid or what? Like, were you...
No, my mom, because my mom actually worked from home.
Yeah.
She started, like, she was one of the first waves of telecommuters.
Oh.
So she was at Sprint, and that was when, like, my grandma would pick me up from school in the fucking Chrysler New Yorker.
Okay.
You know, yeah. My grandma's the sweetest lady, too. She would be so embarrassing because, like, I get out at school at 3, you know, my grandma would be waiting there at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
I'd be, like, getting back from lunch, and my grandma's already in the parking lot, and I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, nah, like, I always had someone there. So then, like, once my mom started telecommuting, then she would just be there, and that was dope.
So mom's very tech savvy.
Dude, the weirdest thing is no. Bruh, she don't know. She doesn't know how to work a phone. She
really?
Never answers her phone. Very typical, regular mom. Like,
that's so
you
funny.
Know?
Being like an early adopter telecommunicator or telecommuter, you would think like, oh, yeah, she's up on all the new shit. Works for Sprint. Got the unlimited data plans.
I ask her this all the time. Like, yo, what? I don't get it. I don't understand. But, I mean, her thing is this, like, she tried to explain to me what she's done beyond, like, the way I just explained it.
Uh-huh.
It's impossible to understand. Mm. She's tech savvy on a whole different...
Right.
It's, like...
On a mega
engineering level.
Yeah,
like, not even tech. Like, I know... she barely know how to work a touchscreen, bro.
Right.
But she can, like, make computers from different parts of the world talk to
each
other.
Like, on a macro level, not a micro level, basically. Yeah,
exactly. She understands it on, like, a way larger scale.
So I assume your grandmother that you're talking about that would pick you up is your mom's mom.
Yeah.
So does your dad's family...
Grandma Hattie.
Does he have family out here, or are they all in Louisiana still?
So my Grandma Hattie passed away. Rest her soul. She was an incredible woman.
Right.
I mean, like, she was, you know, the daughter of sharecroppers, bro.
Wow.
So it's just, like, coming from that. And, like, you know, and then my dad has nine siblings.
Nine siblings.
Wow. One passed away, so there's nine of them all together now, bro.
Yeah, so you have a lot of family... From the Louisiana side, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tons.
Did you go out there a lot as a kid?
No, I've actually never been to Louisiana because when my dad moved, everybody moved.
Everybody
moved.
Because
it's one of those things. Yeah. So it's a move. Like, my aunties moved, my grandma moved, everybody moved at once to Sacramento.
No shit.
And then there was a migration down there. So, like, my family split between Sactown and.
Okay, LA. So you'd be back and forth to Sacramento a lot then?
No, I've actually never been, dude.
You never been to Sacramento or Louisiana?
I've never been.
Wow, you got to go back to
I've never been. Like, all my dad, so basically. Basically, my grandma moved down to L.A., so all my dad's brothers and sisters, he's the oldest, and he was a senior when they moved.
Okay.
So all my dad's brothers and sisters all are, like, L.A. to the core. My dad's, like, always been salty because he had to move a bunch, you know, so he doesn't feel like he had, like, his spot. But, like, everyone else is, like, L.A., and then my dad's aunt, so my great aunt is Sacramento.
Yeah.
They come down here a lot, but yeah, I've actually never been up there, bro. It's crazy.
All right, so let's talk about your, like, direct family lineage then, because I'm already hearing, like, oh, my dad's old.
It's
he's
a family
70.
Tree.
There's, like, some interesting shit going on here, because I bet your mom's younger than 70.
Right, she's a little bit, but she's not that much younger. My mom's 59.
Okay.
So my parents are, like, older.
Are they second marriages or something, or what?
My mom, I'm her first and only.
First and only. Yeah.
And my dad, it was, like, his second marriage, and I have two half-brothers, Jarrell and Reggie.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're, like, all 10 years apart.
Yeah.
So
wow.
My dad took his time.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So your mom got off to, what, like, a late start because she was a career woman or what?
No, she always just says that she just wanted to take her time.
Yeah.
And, like, really live life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean.
And she did.
Yeah, and she did. She did it, man. She got all the pictures.
Right.
She got all the pictures for me. Yeah, you know, so.
Right. So you grew up essentially as an only child then. Like, you have half-brothers, but, like, sociologically and emotionally, I would say you're probably, like, an only child.
Only child, exactly. So it's fucked up.
Not fucked up. It's just you got more attention. You got a lot of attention, probably.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah, so it's, like, even, you know, but I think that, like, having brothers and sisters is pretty dope.
Yeah.
And, like, I have brothers, you know, but we didn't grow up together like that.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, yeah, I kind of missed that. I feel like I missed out on a cool part of life that you only get, you know, one shot at.
Right, right. I feel you. I mean, the grass is always greener. Growing right. up with brothers and sisters, you're like, oh, I wish I was by myself more.
Yeah, that's like, true. I can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think I'm pretty good at sharing and shit. Yeah. Like, I think I figured out how to play with other kids.
Right.
But, yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah.
It can get lonely and shit.
Talk to me about early life in Orange County. What were you into before high school and the band stuff? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, what did you get into?
I mean, I was like, every other like black kid trying to find his way. I wanted to be a basketball player and a rapper like okay. forever. You
yeah,
know
right.
what I mean? And then also at the same time I was skating,
uh-huh.
like obviously because I'm in Orange County, so I'm skating too. And
yeah,
but that lasted real short. I definitely had all the skater shoes, was
yeah.
never really good at skating,
right.
went to the Van Skate Park in Orange at the block
yeah.
and was in the mini pipe learning how to drop in, dropped
broke
in,
shit.
Broke my shit.
What'd you break?
My ankle.
Oh, I broke my ankle in eighth
yeah,
grade. It's
never,
terrible.
Sixth grade, broke my ankle, was stoked on the cast because
yeah.
that's another experience. I'm all about the experience.
Right,
you
right,
know
right.
what I mean? Another experience I got to have. Everyone signed my cast and shit,
yeah.
so that was tight, but I never skated again. Like, fuck that.
You know, that's funny. In eighth grade, which ankle was it?
Right ankle.
I broke my left ankle in eighth grade, and my dad was a medic in the Air Force, so
yeah.
like I had pretty much the unlimited casts on deck. Like, as you know, how your ankle starts to shrink and your
right.
cast gets real loose.
Right.
Every time it would get a little loose, I'd be like, "Hey, Dad, I want a new cast." He would take me to
right.
the clinic. So
I had
like mad different color ones. I
yeah.
had like a green one, a blue one. Like,
oh.
Yeah, I just kept doing it. The thing I remember is I got those like fancier crutches, like the forearm crutches,
oh.
instead of the armpit ones. Bro, I got so good at them, I could like walk on them like stilts and shit. It was amazing. But similarly, like,
what's the kid from South Park, Jimmy?
Yeah, I had the Jimmy crutches, real
That's
shit.
That's amazing.
But yeah, it was the same thing where like I did it playing football, and then I was like, well, fuck football. Like,
yeah.
I'm done with that shit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it sounds like with you with skateboarding.
Right. It was one of those things where it's like, this, I don't love this enough.
Exactly.
Like, just to keep it real,
right.
you know what I mean? I
right.
just don't love this enough.
Right.
Now, like, rap, I've gone through some shit probably worse than breaking your ankle for
yeah,
rap, you
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
And like that, obviously, I did. But yeah, you figure out your true passions if you're really looking for them.
That's a pretty profound thing to realize. I've never really thought of it that way, but yeah, like if you love it enough, you'll kill yourself for it. You
right.
know what I mean? And like that was the thing. It was like I was really into baseball, so like baseball, I would fuck myself up, and I'd be like, okay, gotta get better
yeah.
so I can keep playing. And then football, I was like, I'm just not passionate enough about this. If I'm gonna be breaking myself, this ain't what it's gonna be for.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because that's really, you know.
Yeah, Orange County has the kind of like stereotype of being extra white. So was it different growing up as a black kid in Orange County?
Yeah, it was different, but well, I mean, it definitely has parts where it's extra white, but then there's another part. I'm from North Orange County
okay.
specifically,
yeah.
right? So that's like La Habra, Fullerton, Anaheim,
uh-huh.
Buena Park, Stanton, and like that's a little different. Like, it's predominantly Hispanic.
Okay.
So, like, honestly, I always tell people, when it really boils down to it, a lot of times I find myself relating to, like, Latino people more
right.
than anything, because that's
right.
who I grew up with a lot.
Right.
And then
I'm sure people probably thought you might be Hispanic at
right.
points in your life,
people
right?
People think I'm,
yeah.
like, Dominican all the time. So
right.
I just got back from New York. Everyone was like, hey, Poppy.
Yeah,
and I'm
right.
like, I don't know. What's
yeah,
up,
yeah.
though?
yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, I mean, growing up, you know, is all about Watermelon Suckers and Lucas and, you know, just.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Me, I grew up around, like, literally probably 90% of my friends were Mexican.
Okay.
So, nah, it wasn't extra white. It was super Mexican for me, honestly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like.
Nice. Did you find yourself going through any, like, identity
yeah,
crises mm-hmm. or anything like that? Trying
yeah.
to find your place of.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like,
yeah.
growing up, you know, like, I mean, just trying to fit into the world, like the way I say it is, like there's not really like a lot of mixed archetypes,
right?
You know,
right.
So like, as a mixed kid, what am I supposed to be? Like the world, which isn't a good thing necessarily, but the world kind of shows you these different stereotypes.
Right.
Like this is stereotypically white man. This is stereotypical black man, right?
Totally.
Like archetypes. And
yeah. You didn't have that on TV growing
no,
up either. There was
no
mixed people on TV.
No, that's not on TV.
Yeah.
Barack Obama, you know,
yeah.
is like the big one now,
yeah.
but it's like you didn't have that. So it was kind of like, what do I look like? What do I act like? What do I be? And then obviously, you know, hanging out with like the black kids, always too white, and hanging out with the white kids, you're too
right.
black, and like it's hard to find your place. And it was kind of the same way with my family.
Yeah.
And I had to learn.
Yeah, when you go to like family reunions or family functions on your mom's side, are you the only brown kid there?
Yeah, 1,000%.
How did that feel growing up?
It was crazy because, like, I mean, from both sides, it made me feel out of place. Like, yeah, it was right. Like at my dad's side, I'm like the only light skinned one. Everyone, like, I remember this one day, one of my uncles. I'm not gonna put you on blast right now.
But you know who you are,
Uncle D. But this man called me a peckerwood, and I was like, I didn't know what that was, right? Because that's a weird ass diss anyway. Right. Who the fuck says that?
Right.
And then, like, I went home and was like, Mom, Uncle D called me a peckerwood.
Yeah.
And she was like, she got so hot, bro. It was like, what? And, you know, it'd always be little shit like that all the time, or just, like, going to school and, like, you know, the whole, like, you don't sound like a stereotype. Like, you don't sound like a normal black guy.
Right,
it's like,
right.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
And, like, all that shit. So, of course, like, dealing with all that shit my whole life. So that is really, like, a big piece of, like, what makes me me.
Uh-huh.
Because basically I had to realize that I'm never going to really fully fit in.
Yeah.
And probably I imagine everyone feels like that to some degree, no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to learn how to just be comfortable with yourself.
Totally.
And just be you.
And some people, I would imagine, internalize that and allow that to paint them into a corner, and other people embrace that and allow that to, like...
Right.
Like, just explain that elephant in the room from the get-go and just talk to everybody and be friendly to people or whatever.
Yeah. I think for sure, like I've had people be like, yo, you just got to choose. Like, you know, you just got to choose a side. Like, people literally told me that. So it's like...
America's so weird that way.
Whoa! Yeah. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, to be real, it's crazy. So that's just... That's definitely a big piece of me and kind of what makes me me as an artist and a person overall is dealing with that identity crisis issues growing up and then getting to the point where I just had to be like, fuck it. Like, I am who I am, you know? My dad's black. Like, I identify as a black man, but I also know that I'm white, you know? And I'm mixed race in America, and that definitely has affected me and made me who I am.
You said you were playing basketball in school. Like, what other things did you get into other than basketball? Did you take to school?
I was a really good student up until I wasn't.
Right.
Like, I don't know. So I was in, you know, honors math, like algebra 2 freshman year, like 8th grade. I used to go to the high school for math and then come to junior high for the rest of the day, like in one of those programs.
Right.
Sophomore year, I linked back up with, like, my best friend from junior high, Alex, and he was one of those, like, one of the punker kids, you know? And he showed me, which is so funny, like, when you're outside, when you don't know a lot about other genres and shit, but it's like, he introduced me to a man called Gym Class Heroes, which isn't punk music at all, right?
They were big in, like, 05, 06.
Right, so he was just like, yo, like, this is dope. And so, speaking of, like, when archetypes start coming into place for me, right? Travis McCoy.
There's a...
Bam.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
mixed race archetype.
Oh, shit. So I can be that?
Right.
Like, I'm allowed to do this?
Right.
Okay. Like, this, like, you know. And then at the same time, there's Kanye out, which, I mean, I was just the biggest Kanye stan ever, still him to this day.
Right. That was that era of, like, Kanye, N.E.R.D.
Lupe, Pharrell.
Yeah.
Travi. Like, all of a sudden, these... Which were the different kids, and now I guess we're just, like, the only kids, right? But at the beginning, that was, like, you were weird for doing that shit. So I remember getting, like, disowned by the basketball team for coming to school in tight pants.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, all of those things
started coming into play. That's a really interesting era in music for me because being, like, a half generation older than you, like, that era didn't affect kids my age that much, but it did affect the kids that are 10, 15 years younger, where it's like, I would say that where I am, 808s and Heartbreaks is probably like my least favorite Kanye album. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like the least traditional, I guess. But for so many, that's like the most influential Kanye album. You know what I mean? And like N.E.R.D. didn't really hit me like that, but I know that N.E.R.D. is like hugely influential to kids a half generation younger than me, and that affects the music that comes out today, yeah?
1,000%.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, I mean, we can't forget Lupe in that time either, bro. Like, the Food and Liquor, all those mixtapes, Revenge of the Nerds, like, all of them were just insane. Yeah, that was the dopest time, but it was really weird because also I think that was, like, Snap Dancing was happening at once.
Right.
Because I remember, like...
Oh, I think they
like
me.
I remember being at the Boys and Girls Club with, like after school and watching, like, Young Jock and doing the It's Going Down dance.
Hell yeah.
And then probably going home and listening to, like, Graduation or something at the same time.
Right.
So that's like, that's it. That was a super weird time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where like these two worlds were parting, and you kind of saw a departure from gangster rap, maybe.
Yeah, totally. Right. There became like this kind of alternative art wave, I guess. So that's when like the music took over and you stopped caring about studies as much, or what?
Yeah, definitely stopped caring about studies. But it's crazy because like at that time when all that hip hop was booming, I was like loving that. And then at the same time, like learning about different music, because I'm in a band now.
Right.
So I got...
So your buddies are like, yo, listen to Pennywise.
Yeah, well, nah. Listen, you know, different like Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy and then like super heavy shit like Born of Osiris and like death metal basically. So I'm like... I'm on some, like, I'm not going to lie, when everybody started popping out of the box on some, like, a rock star shit, I had to adjust for a minute because I'm like, no, I've been crowd surfing for years, player. Like, I'm in Chain Reaction right now, you know what I mean?
What was your band called?
Close But Not Quite.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we did some things. We did, like, a Hot Topic tour back in the day. Wow. Yeah, like, I mean, I really did this shit.
Yeah.
We followed Warp Tour, so we were just, like, a band that followed. We snuck in every day, selling our CDs. So,
wow.
I mean, been doing it to where, like, people kind of have followed me across genres, which has been dope.
Yeah.
Obviously, like I said, hip-hop's always my first love. But I'm the type of person, I want to make the best music possible. So if you put the dopest band ever in front of me... And then you could work with this dope ass band, or you could work with this whack producer. I'm not gonna pick the producer just because he's making hip hop.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
Right,
I'm gonna fuck with the band. Like if you tell me they make better music, I'm fucking with them.
Right.
So that's kind of like how I've always done things, and it's dope that people are down to follow me on that journey.
Did you end up graduating high school?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are a few themes on this show, and one of them is like bad dads. That's a lot of artists have bad dads for some reason, and then the other one is that like people are really good students until they like get really into music and then they just say fuck it and drop out. So I was curious maybe if you
Really good student. I did say fuck it and dropped out. I then like, but my parents weren't having that.
Yeah.
So but me and my mom kept this shit from my dad. I literally told my dad like 2 years ago like that yo dad, I went to continuation school.
Oh, so you did drop out for a minute and then you went back to like
dropped out. Went to continuation school.
Yeah. So
I never told my dad, moms, include the dads. Like, when we talk about bad dads, it's like, that's a thing. Like, a lot of times, dads aren't included, like, the way they should. And at the time, I was, like, so thankful to my mom for not telling my dad. You know what I mean?
Because
he
would have
whooped that ass. But low-key, that's what I fucking needed, bro.
Right.
Like, to be real.
When your folks divorced, was he, like, not in there as much as you would have liked, or what?
Nah. He was there as much as he possibly could be. And my mom was really good at it, you know? She just had that protective mom thing.
Okay.
And so when it probably came time to really discipline me, dad could have came in, but that shit didn't happen. So I was a little wild, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of just did what I wanted, and my mom supported it, which I'm super fucking grateful for because it made me the insane artist that I am. But also at the same time, like, my first album's called Late Bloomer, and I feel like one of the major reasons why, like, I'm a late bloomer is because I lacked discipline. Like, I needed to figure that out for myself, and it took me a little bit of time to get it together, you know? And so I think for sure.
But do you feel like in being a late bloomer that maybe when you were younger you weren't ready and that you're happy that it's happening now instead?
1,000%
Yeah.
Of course, that's the only way it can work out. And like also, you know, I think God gives you things like when you're ready for it.
Right.
So like I got baptized for my 25th birthday.
Oh wow.
And like 2 weeks later someone broke into my house in K-Town and stole everything.
Wow.
Like my computer, all my jewelry. I just got a grill from Mr. Blings and down in Slauson. Like everything, man, he stole. Like,
they stole your teeth?
They stole my fucking teeth,
bro. That's fucked up. What are you going to do with the teeth? Like,
dude, that's the thing.
They're going to fit
what
you. Why are you going to take those?
I just moved into a crib.
Yeah.
This shit going to sound like a setup. I've done all the research I can. I don't know. If y'all know any information, let me know. But basically, I just.
Crime Stoppers, kind of neat version.
Let's go.
Yeah.
It was a breezy day in February 2016 when an unsuspecting group of children get their house broken into while they were out at Ham on Everything, a popular L.A. party.
I was probably bartending that party.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shit. So anyway, like, we were out. Some fools broke into the crib. It was crazy.
Really?
It was crazy. And so, like, we got back. Everything's gone. Everything. So
here's the thing. I've never gotten to relate to anybody on this. So I'm going to throw something out there and you see if you feel it. My house got robbed the week after I graduated from college, right? And I'm a photographer, and so I had all of my negatives that I had shot for 5 years. I had all my like hard drives that had digital files of pictures on it, everything, my portfolio, everything got stolen. But it kind of felt like a clean slate, and now I had to force myself to create more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened for me is, like, coming up in a band world, right, there's something cool about, like, yeah, so when I lost my shit, it brought me back to being in bands, which was dope. Because when you're in a band, you don't necessarily, it's not like, okay, we're in a room, we're sitting behind a computer, like, we make this beat, now go record it.
Yeah.
Writing a song is like, you might be writing a song with your band for a couple weeks. Like, first you jam it, someone finds the thing on guitar, then you got to get the beat, you figure out the structure.
Right, it's polishing.
The whole time they're jamming, you're thinking of lyrics and stuff, right? So when I lost my computer, it was like, oh, music is more than just, like, recording, you know? And I think I was so in this mind state of, like, this shit is just about finding a beat and, like, instant gratification of, like, having the product.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, like, 2 weeks where I didn't – there was, like, a few weeks where I didn't have a computer. I had to, like, dig out this old-ass, like, thing I finally found that, like, kind of worked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was a couple weeks where I didn't have anything at all, and I just started, like – playing on guitar, like, the little tiny bit I knew, and, like, messing with piano. And it was, like, I forgot what it was like to have songs, like, stuck in your head.
Yeah, like latent songs that were not on
your
computer.
You have a studio, so, like, you could probably relate in the sense of, like, people just, like, you got a song, and then it's out.
Uh-huh.
It's out of your head. You know what I mean? Remember when you were saving up money to record, and you had 5 records just, like, in your head for 6 months, and, like, you knew that shit at, like, the back of your hand when you went in.
Yeah.
So it's reminding me about that and, like, taking my time a little bit. So that was dope. But I'm not going to lie, I had other people's music because I engineered. Like, that's how I kind of came up.
Okay.
So I had other people's music. So it was a good feeling for me. Selfishly, I'm not going to lie, I did feel that.
Uh-huh.
But on a level of some of the music I lost from other people,
that
bro.
That fucked them over.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It hurt. I thought I was going to have to, like, fight a couple times just off the strength of, like, everyone knew it wasn't my fault, but just off the strength of, like, I would have been so mad. I probably would have wanted to fight me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But luckily, everyone was cool. And
yeah,
because
there's no insurance policy
love.
On fucking lost songs.
On
you know,
data.
Just, like, start over.
Yeah, unless you have it backed up, which everyone back your shit up. I didn't have my shit backed up. Dirty.
That's miserable, man.
Right.
What ham party was it?
I can't even remember. Tommy was there, though. Tommy Genesis.
Okay.
And pulled up with the homegirls. And then after that, it was crazy, though, because that night she was there playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the night I lose all my stuff. Mm-hmm. Couple months later, click up with her and Ye Ali, and we did a project.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, like, yo, the first night I found out about you, my whole life got fucked over.
That's so funny.
You know? So it's kind of crazy how things all work out. But, I mean, directly after that, I moved out of that crib. I, like, just moved into a studio, you know, like a lockout, no windows, 8x9, had a futon and a little ass table that would fit in there, had all my equipment, started posting Craigslist ads. At the same time, Tommy, like my homie Ye, was like, yo, this girl Tommy wants to do a project. They came through to record. Tommy was like, why don't you just be in the group with us. So we did Baby Daddy.
That's why I know. That's why your name sounds so familiar. And, okay, now I remember because around the time that Tommy did
your episode, right?
Yeah, the episode
we were
of Camp,
working on.
She was showing me pictures of you guys and was like, oh, yeah, this is what. And like, she's like, look, isn't he cute? Da, 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 da. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So now that's why I recognize your name. I was trying to put that together this whole time. I'm like, why does this still look so familiar beyond just the video and everything?
That's
okay.
So yeah, Tommy and Ye did a project called Baby Dot Daddy. And if y'all don't, if you guys haven't heard it, check it out, man. It's super dope. Kind of slept on, so everyone needs to peep that.
All right. Yeah. Now it's all coming together. Yeah. Okay. So, Wes, let's go back a little bit because I am interested in your journey as a band member. And I'm curious, like, while you're still in high school, it sounds like that's when the creativity really started to blossom. So, tell me some of the, like, great grimy stories that you don't get to tell that often, you know what I mean, of, like, being in a band and, like, you know, just how shit has changed in the last 10 years or whatever. Like, what were your hustles like when you're in a high school band, like, handing out flyers and shit like that? Or
yeah, bro. Yeah. So, listen, this is MySpace days, y'all.
Okay.
So like social media worked a lot different. Like you could do a bulletin post on MySpace, but it wasn't necessarily like as interpersonal as it is now.
And you
now.
Really couldn't tell your metrics. Like when you put a bulletin out there, it didn't tell you like this many people have opened
it.
Yeah,
there's no like button.
Right, there's
so
no like.
So it was just like maybe people are seeing it, maybe it's not. So it was pretty crazy because it was just before everything started hitting. So I'm fucking passing out flyers. It was crazy because I was young. So I'm out there being a kid. And that's kind of what my like advantage has been. Like I was on the internet hella young. So like everyone else that was out there maybe wasn't on MySpace, they still passing out flyers. I'm doing both. I'm with like the 30-year-old rappers when I'm like 14 years old passing out my demo outside of a show, and at the same time working MySpace, fucking putting people in my top eight, like giving top eight trades, all those things. So it's like kind of being starting out so young. Like I've been in the game for 10 years. I'm only 26. You know what I'm saying? But that's like from the very beginning. I played my first show when I was 16.
Was that a Chain Reaction?
Mm-hmm. No. It was at the Alley in Fullerton, if anyone remembers that place.
Who are some of the bands that you were like so excited to open for? Because I remember being a youngster, that was like the big thing. It's like, oh man, we're opening for this band. Right. This might be the big break.
Yo, so our big thing was one of our like second shows ever, we opened for The Pack and Tyga.
Oh, wow.
Tyga and The Pack were on tour.
Yeah.
So that was tight for me because it was like, I rap. Like, I'm always been a rapper. So it was like, hell yeah. So that was crazy. And it was like Vans On era.
Right.
Like that, they just dropped an EP and it had Vans On and a couple other songs.
Uh-huh.
And and then Tyga was opening. He didn't have anything we know Tyga for yet.
Right.
And so that was, like, really dope. And then later on, we did this battle of the bands to play Bamboozle Left.
There you go.
And and we won the whole thing. And, like, first place was playing Main Stage and opening for 50 Cent. So we got to open. We played Main Stage Bamboozle Left and opened for 50 Cent.
Where's that at? Is it like a college thing or something?
No, Bamboozle is like a big-ass festival from New Jersey that's on the East Coast.
Oh.
And then they moved it to the West Coast. I don't think they do it anymore, but it was at like what is it, Verizon Amphitheater?
Oh, shit.
Like, it was huge, bro. Way, like, super-duper big.
Right.
So that was like...
Did you go on early or like...
We were like midday.
Yeah. How is that as like a relatively unknown band playing a venue that big? Was it...
Bro... Honestly, maybe it's just me. Like, I think my live show is dope, but there's nothing like live shows, bro.
Yeah.
Like, people still come up to me from random stuff. Like, I played a show open for Vic Mensa like 3 years ago, and people still come up to me out the, like, in the streets of LA, like, yo, I saw you with Vic Mensa.
Yeah.
It's just like, and you know, that's Echoplex, so like, I don't know what the cap is, but that's not huge.
Right.
But dude, like, yeah, that did a lot. It was dope, man.
Really?
Yeah, and especially at that time, like, things were a little different where it didn't seem like every person in the world was popping. So to be able to be like, yo, we played with 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Like, we opened for him like, five bands before him.
Right. What was the lineup of your band like? You guys had guitarist, bassist, drummer, and you? Or
two guitars, a bass, and drums.
And what would you say, like, what did Close But Not Quite sound like? Like, who were your contemporaries?
Bro, no one. Like, go back right now, like, I would say nobody sounded like Close Not Quite Till Kids these days.
Kids these days. That's a strong comparison.
Right.
They're
so
dope.
Yeah. So like,
did you guys have a horn section then?
No.
No.
But it was just like the kind of like the vibe of what they were like. It was like that. But maybe we were like, they were just more polished because we were doing it way like a little earlier.
Yeah.
But
if you guys don't know Kids these days, that's where Vic Mensa came from.
Yeah.
Right? And they were really dope. Yeah.
Dude, they were amazing.
Yeah. Very polished.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's the thing. Like on top of it. So we were like that kind of, but
a little more raw.
In our, like, homies' bedroom recordings.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Did you do, like, band stuff in school? Did you learn to play instruments like that?
Man. No? So, I just, like, now I'm, like, producing a lot of my stuff and all that. And, like, that just came from hanging out with musicians.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would, like, tell everybody that, bro. Like, just hang out with musicians and learn.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is that, like, I don't, most people don't care to learn, bruh. Like, they'll sit in the room, like, as an engineer, right, I'll be, like, when I was engineering, I'd be with rappers that sit in the room in the studio with me for 6 hours a day, and, like, they still don't know how to do, like, the first thing on the computer. And that's cool if that's your wave, do your thing, they're killing it. But for me, I'm kind of like, I couldn't let someone just look at some shit for 6 hours and then be doing a whole thing over there and me not go, hey, what you doing, bro?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, like, I picked up, like, my musicianship just from being around people. Like, what's that? Why are you putting your fingers like that? Hey, I noticed, like, it looks the same way and you just slide it up and down. What's that mean? Oh, right. That's a power chord. Okay, like.
A lot of people in my life have asked me, like, oh, well, you know, you're so passionate about music. Why didn't you go to school for music? Like, because I went to school for photography.
Right.
And as a kid, I thought I was passionate about photography, but I realized now as an adult, I wasn't, like, passionate enough to teach myself. But similar to our stories about breaking our ankles and like, realizing that that's not what we wanted to kill ourselves over, it's like, your true passion, you will take the time to learn it on your own. And no one's going to need to teach you. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to need to teach you that. So with the photography shit, like, I make money off of it, but I've always looked at it as a job because I wasn't passionate enough to teach myself about it. And the music shit, I, like, you know, you could probably look at a wave and tell what word it is now.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And it's like, I taught myself that shit too.
Right.
Just by accident, just because, like, I love it so much.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing for me. It was just like, anything that I'm going to be around enough, I have a passion for, I'm going to learn about it. So it's like, you know, and it's helped so much in my career because at this point I get to be co-directing my music videos because, like, I can pull up Photoshop. I can go into Final Cut. Like, I can hit Premiere. Like, I can touch a little bit of everything.
Right.
And, like, I'm so grateful that, you know, whatever, God put that in me to just ask questions and be curious.
Yeah, right.
And most of the time, people will answer them.
Yeah.
People always be like, oh, like, no one's helps me. It's like, are you really asking? Are you doing your work after someone tells you what to do?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because that's the other thing. Is like, when you know something, you want to tell people about it. It's just like, you got to ask the right questions to get the answers. You know what I mean? Like, people are willing to share their knowledge if you show enough interest in it, really.
I think the era of people, like, trying to hold mad secrets is over.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think now it's just kind of like, I saw Lex Luger posted a really long time ago. Lex Luger, like, tweeted, like, his drum kit out, like, years ago. And he just put, and it was when he was, like, the hottest producer in the game.
Yeah.
And he was just like, yo, I'm not tripping. Do whatever you want with my sounds because you're not going to make, like, you're not going to make what I make with them.
Right.
You know? And before that, there was this whole culture, I feel like, of people, like, not sharing samples.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Rap production has always been very secretive.
Yeah, but I feel like now most of the homies that I'm with, like, are hella easy, bro. Like, you know, a lot of the dope producers, like, you know, my contemporaries on the production, like, I don't know if you know Business Boy, like, the homie Biz, Theory, Swizzy Mac. Like, there's a bunch of people out there, and we all share everything and just, you know.
Swizzy Mac from Philadelphia?
Yeah.
I actually have randomly picked him up from the airport before to take him to a hand party.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, he's a cool kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, man. As far as, like, sharing ideas goes, like, when people ask for advice, if they catch me in the right mood, I'll give them advice.
Yeah.
And I'll tell them all the fucking secrets. And you know why? Because I don't think that knowing how to do it means that you're going to do it, because you could know how to do something, but you got to have that fucking drive to actually do it.
Right.
So there's a difference between knowing the path and actually walking the path and having the stick-to-itiveness to achieve. You know what I mean? And that's the one thing that people are just missing is, like, if you're going to do it, you'll learn how to do it. It just depends on, like, the amount of heart that you have and the drive that you have to succeed and do it. You know what I'm saying?
Perseverance, bro. Like, I lived in studios. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
you sleep on a fucking futon in a windowless room because you're driven.
That's what it is.
Right.
And that was, like, probably the most like, honestly, to this day, when I look at it, like, simplest, happiest time of my life, bro. Like, I was just working up, waking up. I got a session. I'm already here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, tell me how we got to that point. Like, when did Close But Not Quite kind of come to an end and you start going on your own journey?
Yeah, so Close But Not Quite was, like, into high school.
Yeah.
And then
people just went off to college and that was it?
Yeah, did that thing. We did a tour. We did a Hot Topic tour after high school.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of, like, started fizzling. And then at the same time, I was in this other, like, another band started called Golden West. And it was basically, like, the same thing, but kind of took a, like, electronic direction. Like, it was still a band. It was a guitar player and a drummer. And but we had, like, a lot more programming. Close But Not Quite was almost 100% live music. So we had, like, a bunch of programming, and then that kind of started doing something. We went on tour with this dude named T Mills.
Oh yeah, I know T Mills. Yeah. I know who that is. I don't know.
Yeah, so with T Mills, he goes just by Travis now, but he took us on our first tour way back in the day, and then
so you probably know Syrah.
Yeah, I do know Syra.
That's one of the old school homies that came up with
the LA rap scene. From the Ham days and shit.
No, even way before Ham.
That's crazy.
Ham came into fruition at the end of 2011, right? And I knew Adam from even before that, because Adam used to be like this super underground rap nerd, like trying to rap under the name Adamantium MC. And back then, everybody just thought he was this annoying kid, but I could just tell, like, oh, this dude is fucking driven, you know what I'm saying? And then it takes a few failures before you come up with, like, the real idea that's going to take you there, and that was Ham on everything.
Right.
But no, I know Syra
Syra
from like 2004.
That's crazy. Yeah. So I remember Adam, bro, from pulling up. I used to run with, like, I don't know if you know Panda Vuitton and like Young L from the pack.
I know Young L. I know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, I'll be around Cena a bit and stuff, just like some of the Bay dudes. And I remember L had a show and Adam was promoting it. And we pulled up and there was just this white dude with like crazy, like the Ray-Ban, the neon Ray-Bans and fucking some weird like Hawaiian shirt. And he was just cooking like harder than anyone I ever seen cook.
Yeah.
So
I always tease Adam about like his phases. You know what I mean?
Because you know that phase.
He and I are literally the same age. We're about a month apart in age. And this fool like goes through phases like he's still a 16-year-old. And I'm always teasing him because I'm just like, yo, like 4 years ago, you were dressed like fucking the Hawaiian Sophie vid every fucking day, like a weirdo, you know what I'm saying? And like then he went through like a t-shirt phase where it was like all these like, you know, he wanted all of his shirts to have like some kind of catchphrase on him and shit. And I'm just like, yo, you're such a weirdo. But I love that fool. But
no, yo, shout out Adam for holding it down in the scene for forever.
Yeah, forever.
The hardest cooker I've ever seen. If we go back to whatever year that was, I want to challenge anyone.
I remember when he like found out about Lil B and cooking. It was like end of 11 because they were doing – they used to do Hipsters Who Heart Hip Hop.
Yeah.
And I used to play those shows for him. And then right around 2011, he was like, wait. I'm done with nerd rap. I want to fuck with swag rap. And so everyone was like, swag, swag, swag. Yo, and like, cook. You know, yeah. It was fucking
–
and I was just like, what a Johnny Come Lately ass weirdo. But I was like, but he's onto something.
Yo, man. Shout out to the characters of the LA scene.
Yeah, that was like a real fucking inside baseball moment. But yeah, so I know T Mills and Syra's the one who told me about T Mills way back in the day.
I ran into Syra at the airliner like years ago. Like she was just playing a show and someone was like, this is gonna be the next Nicki Minaj. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then like 2 years later, she won a Grammy. So shout out Syra, you know?
Yeah, like I know Syra before the Skrillex days. You know what I'm saying? Like Syra was a real backpacking ass rapper, hip hop head.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. Like back in the day, like she had some crazy scary bars. Yeah, like she wasn't fucking around.
Yeah, that's the homegirl.
Yeah.
So anyhow, you went on tour with T Mills with Golden West.
Yeah. And then after that band broke up. Bands break up, y'all. Bands break up. So
they will make her dance and they will break up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with that being said, ooh, that was fly. Hold up, you know? Bands will make her dance and then they break up.
Go ahead, man. Whew. Use it. You can have it. You can have it. Just shout me out. Yeah.
So, that band broke up. So that was like a theme where I was like, okay, you know, we're not doing the band thing again because I'm doing this shit.
Would you go through these like lapses of depression after that? Like it would seem like an era was ending?
Bro, I had to go to a self-realization class after Golden West broke up.
Yeah.
I thought it was over, son.
Right.
I was like 21. I was like, oh, my life is...
What am I going to do?
Over.
Yeah.
It's done.
Okay.
I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah. Like, yeah. It was like the hardest time of my life probably for like 2 years, dude.
When stuff like that happens, it feels like it's like a grandparent dying and a girl breaking up with you all wrapped into one or something.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, like I tried to keep up with music. I put something out and it was dope. Like, and then I took it down because I just wasn't in the right – I started doing that a bunch.
Yeah.
I went through that phase of, like, putting music up and taking it down all the time, which isn't cool, y'all. Just rock with your life.
At the same time, that was probably a smart maneuver in hindsight because that's the thing is that stuff lives on the internet forever. And I always tell young artists, like, yo, don't put shit out there until you know that's you. Because
Lee, my shit always been hot.
Yeah.
I should have left it up.
Okay. Well, there you go. No, that's good. That's the confidence that is needed. But I always tell people it's very rare to get a second first impression.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, particularly if you're not doing name change shit where you're not reinventing yourself every project, if somebody hears West Period in 2006 and it's not tight and they hear West Period, that name in 2017, they're like, I already know what he sounds like and I don't like it.
Okay. And you know what? I feel you because it was to my benefit in the sense of like, just like right now, you're like, we know so many people from a very long time, and you're like, Wes, you brand new. Like, how do I know you again?
But this is the thing that, this era is the thing that talked to me. I was like, okay, I fuck with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just like, totally. And so I think for that reason, but I mean, it was crazy because I was always getting looks. Like, for instance, that EP I took down was called Friendly Fire EP, like Pigeons and Planes premiered it. And
there
you know, so I was always getting love. But it was like, I just wasn't – so that's to say that it was, like, really my headspace affecting me and not the music. Like, I was depressed, bro. Mm. I was super sad after the band broke up. So then that just is when I embarked on, like, this is, like, the pinnacle or, like, you know, the beginning, I guess, of the pinnacle of that journey, of the solo journey, because I've always been a rapper, but – I was never in a rap group, but I've never been a solo artist. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? So it was like me learning how to like even really get comfortable rapping on just proper beats. Because I was rapping on like live instrumentation.
And rapping strictly to satisfy yourself and not having to worry about the opinions of other band members.
Right.
Like, is this our voice?
You exactly.
Know, like now it's like, is this my voice?
Is this my voice? Yeah. And that gets a lot more, that gets darker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Convincing yourself, like, is this worth putting into the world? Like, does this have a place in the conversation? That's a very daunting conversation to have with yourself a lot of times unless you have a certain amount of hubris that a lot of artists have, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think for me it's like I'm like – I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out my hubris.
Right.
It's an interesting sort of hubris, you know?
Yeah.
I was talking to my boyfriend Saul the other day. I'm like, bro, I think I need to start feeling myself more. Because it's like, definitely, I think sometimes, like, I wish I could lean on it a little more, man. Because, like, I see some shit and I'm like, damn, if I just had the balls to put that out.
There's a sort of there's a blissful ignorance about hubris, about that, like, I'm fucking dope. And it's like, if you can convince yourself that you're fucking dope, then
it
doesn't matter.
It's probably going to work.
Because then you think anybody that says you're whack is just lying or is a hater. And, like, I never had that hubris. I was like, when people would say, like, oh, you're whack, I'd be like, fuck, they're right. I got to get better.
Okay, you know what? We're getting to it. You're helping. This is therapy, Lee. Okay.
Go ahead.
Listen, so basically, I had the most hubris in the game, bruh.
Yeah,
I was hubris champion. When the band broke up,
because
like we were touring, I'm like, oh boy, I'm going straight to the league. Like I felt like it was like, okay, got out my high school band, this is popping, I'm going, I'm in it, you know. We were on tour, we're doing like meeting with labels and stuff, and then the producer kid was just like, I'm gonna go to college, like out the blue, while we're doing the best we've ever done.
You're like, what? You're gonna be responsible, you motherfucker.
Yeah, and I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and so that ripped me down. And like basically since that moment, it's been a rebuild of true confidence, bro.
Yeah.
You know, like not just on some bullshit, like let me know why I'm confident about what I'm doing. Like I don't want ignorant confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I want that confidence where, because eventually ignorant confidence will get broke down.
Yeah.
Like someone will say that thing that cuts through and you're gonna be fucked.
Like, fuck, yeah.
And it's just gonna fucking be in your head forever, bro.
Right.
And so like and that's all I had. I don't think I had any real self-worth, any real confidence, honestly.
Uh-huh.
And so really from that it's just been a rebuild, bro, of actually being tight and knowing why I'm tight.
Right.
Like, you're not going to tell me anything at this point that's going to fuck me off of where I'm going.
And that's part of the journey of finding the figurative voice, like finding what it is that is your message to get out. You know what I mean? It's like finding that internal confidence of like, oh, this is my purpose.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's a long journey, man.
It's a journey and a half, dude. But I feel really – I mean, I feel good about where it is. But also just knowing that that's real, man.
Yeah.
Like we all need to be taking care of ourselves and our mental health and shit.
Do you battle depression a lot?
Yeah, for sure.
Since childhood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start learning about your depression? I'll preface that with a statement saying that, like, I started realizing I was a sad person around age 11 or 12. I was like, something is wrong with me. I'm always fucking bummed out.
Right.
So.
It didn't start hitting me until, like, eighth grade.
Okay. I remember, yeah, so like 12, 13.
Yeah, 13, 14. I remember like being after school, waiting after school and like having my first just really dark ass thought. Yeah. Like this girl was talking to me and I just remember being like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
This bitch is weird.
Yeah.
I'm mad. And like it just struck me in this weird way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I always remember like, why was I so upset? And then like after that, dude, it got worse. And then you start figuring out that, damn, I'm not like everyone else. Yeah. Like, I'm dealing with depression. And on top of that, like, I don't fit in anyway.
Right.
And then so, like, in high school, it got bad. So it was really a mix of, like, me. Why I left high school was a mix of me finding my passion and only caring about music. And at the same time, also falling into the deepest teenage depression ever.
Right, right.
And honestly, man, yeah, I've been battling with depression forever. Shout out, you know, great dads. This is a great dad episode, right?
Good.
So me and my dad had a crazy conversation. I was trying to explain to him my anxiety, and he's 70. He just comes from a different era of me.
Right.
Where he's like, what? Yeah. Like anxiety,
bro. Yeah, don't
be a bitch. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I was trying to explain.
Talk to me about anxiety when you got fucking mortar shells in Vietnam flying at you.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's like, so he's like, what? You know? And I'm like, nah, bro. Like there's days I'm waking up like, I throw up. Like it's just like bad. Like when everything first started popping, like 5 months ago, when I was like, okay, I'm about to drop Trap Star, like I know this record's gonna go, I started freaking out, and like it just led to like crazy anxiety. And I was telling my dad about it, and he was just like, well, shit. I was like, you don't get it. And like, we've never been on a good communication level, just having those side of conversations, right? And my dad's just like, well, if that's how you feel, let's go to therapy then. And I was like,
did you?
Yeah, but my jaw dropped because you got to understand, this is a 70-year-old dude from Louisiana, bro, who's like, who told me, let's go to therapy together.
Right, but you know what? At that age, what the fuck else do you have to lose?
Right, I guess so.
Like, that's the real
I'm
shit.
I'm proud of him.
That's amazing, and that's
so
a very standard
I just
thing.
Went to my first therapy. So to get to it, I just went to my first therapy session with my dad like 3 months ago.
That's fantastic.
We did like 6 sessions.
Yeah.
And it was really dope, and it was cool because now I'm going to continue therapy on my own. But, like, it was really dope of my dad to come with me because it was more so like a moral support thing and get it going. But, yeah, man, I mean,
what have you been learning?
All kinds of shit. Probably first off, just, like, diagnostics, right? Like, kind of figuring out, like, oh, shit.
Why does this happen to me?
What's happening? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Where does this come from?
Right. Yeah. So, like, learning about, like, depression and then manic episodes, right? And so it's like, oh, dude, like, okay, maybe I didn't stay up hella late all the time and I'm not, like, super happy. You know what I mean? Like, shit be going from, like a lot of kids who are depressed, who are also artists, will like stay up all night and wake up hella tired in the morning for school, and they're staying up all night working on schoolwork or whatever,
that's when
or working on their music or whatever,
on.
Right? Yeah, but that's also like could be considered a manic episode,
right.
And like understanding that, how to not be so up and down and like leveling it out,
even keel. I like to call it even keel.
Right.
Like I've always been, I have what they call systemic depression, and so it's like if this is the normal line right here, I'm never way down here, but I'm always like kind of right here, like right underneath it, you know,
so
my whole goal with regulating my moods has been to avoid these kind of waves of ups and downs and try to keep it like right around normalcy.
Right.
And so when I feel myself getting really down here,
I
have my coping mechanisms to get me back up to like my normal, which is a little below everyone else's normal, but good enough for me.
Right. You know? And so that, and then also like probably the fact that I had ADD, I have ADD, which is like, you know, super crazy shit, bro, that also made me be like, oh man, okay, I'm not a shithead. Like there's a real reason and I can fix it, but like at least I know a reason now, you know? Like I have a super hard time texting people back. Like I'm that friend that like people like, why do you never text me?
Right.
And like that was one of the main things I went in with therapy because me and my dad went together. So, you know, I was telling him
your
like,
dad's like, man, this motherfucker never texts me back.
Yeah.
And she's,
And so we're like, what? You know, and I'm like, I'm like freaking out because I was telling the therapist, like, bro, yeah, like, it's real, but it's not just my dad. It's, like, a lot of people. And I feel bad about it. And I don't know why it's so hard for me to do it. And, like, we started getting to it. And after a few sessions, like, we realized, all right, you have deep ADD. And, like, bro, like,
you're not— So you were never on Ritalin as a kid?
Never. And I also, like I was saying, you know, the way my mom raised me, which was hella supportive, but kind of letting me make my own rules, I had no structure, which is how ADD is formed.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like to, you know, so to like have that, it's like I want to text someone, but then at the same time, my mind's like, oh, I got to go do this real quick. And then my mind's like, oh, I got to go do this. And low key, I just didn't do all three.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And then, yeah, and then as those things start to stack up and you have like this list of chores
and
to do.
And now you're anxious. And now you just triggered some whole other shit.
So it perpetuates itself because by the time you don't do one chore and then you're realizing you have 10 chores that you didn't do and now all of a sudden everything feels unachievable. So what do? You sit on the couch and fucking sulk about it instead.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing and part of the reason why I like to have these conversations is because, you know, you said something a little earlier where you felt alone. You felt like nobody else was experiencing this, but the point is like I experienced that,
right?
Everybody listening experiences that.
Exactly.
Like, this is the human experience, and part of me growing up lately, what I've been kind of thinking about a lot is like the void, you know, like everything we do within us is because there's some kind of deep existential emptiness inside of all of us. And so everybody has their isms, their addictions, like whether it's workaholism, alcoholism, narcotics, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's doing shit to distract themselves from the fucking deep void within as a human. But what's been helping me lately, and I don't know why I'm not like preaching to you, I'm just kind of like talking.
Let me
I think acknowledging the void and acknowledging that it will never fill itself and like there is no such thing as being ever completely like satisfied or making it, you know, like the whole idea of making it, right? As soon as you get to it, you realize it's farther away, and then now you have to start working even harder to get farther because, oh, now that I have $1 million, I realize I need 10, and once I have $10 million, I realize I need 100, and then you get to 100, and you're like, fuck, I still don't feel great, you know? And it's like just kind of acknowledging that void and being okay with it and going like, fuck it, everyone else feels this way too, like, oh wait, I am normal, like that helps me a lot, you know what I'm saying? Like, it helps me feel like satisfied. Like, I used to get really sad about seeing my like, not sad, but I would have extreme jealousy if like one of my friends that was in my peer group would get more popping. I'd be like, fuck, I'm just as good as that, why am I not popping like that? And it hurts your ego, it hurts that hubris for certain. And after a while, I was just kind of like, oh, wait, like, that doesn't affect me. I'm still, like, that shouldn't affect my happiness. And now I don't let it affect my happiness, and I feel a lot better because of it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Anyway.
1,000%. No, yeah. 1,000,000, bro.
That was a total sidebar, but yeah.
No, that is real.
I think as artists, we all have this void that we are seeking to fill. And we fill it partially with the validation of hearing people tell you, like, yo, man, you're dope.
Yeah.
You're dope.
And you try to buy shit and whatever else, but it doesn't.
It never helps.
For me, to be honest, bro, this is going to be corny. But, like, real shit, for me, God, bro. I'm not going to lie.
I don't talk a lot about religion on here, but tell me about God. Yeah. Because, like, here's the thing. Is like I run into a lot of artists that have varying degrees of atheism or agnosticism, but I rarely have somebody that's willing to, like, talk about how religion helps
tight,
them.
It's not tight, huh?
But
like,
go
it's
ahead.
Not tight to, like, to like God. It's crazy. So, for me, I mean, I've been, like, all across the religious spectrum, honestly.
Yeah, right.
Like, I guess I was raised Christian, but we never really went to church or anything.
Yeah.
But my parents would say they're Christian.
Yeah.
And from there, kind of just was like, I don't know. I saw Zeitgeist like everybody else. And I was like, God's not real.
Right,
like, you know. And then when that was it for me. In high school, we all watched Zeitgeist with the lights off. And I was like, nothing's real anymore.
Right,
fuck it.
Right.
Like, and like legit. And then so I was like, okay. And then so I started exploring like all these other options and like, you know, going to self-realization courses and like learning about myself and being like, for sure, there's no way God exists. Like, there's nothing about that that's real at all.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And, there the void was, though. Like, it was just there. And I couldn't help it. And one day I had a really amazing conversation with my dude, Danny, who worked at that shoe company, Creative Recreation, at the time.
Yeah.
And
Danny United?
No, Danny Diaz.
Oh, okay,
but
okay.
He I don't know even exactly what happened, bro. But I remember at one point he was just talking about, like, kind of God is a superstar, Jesus is a superstar in the sense of this. He basically told everyone, like we're talking back to hubris, right?
Yeah.
He told everybody, I'm the shit.
Yeah.
And I'm the son of God. And you're going to believe this shit or you're not going to believe it. And he died for it.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the
Breaking an ankle.
How did this just come full circle right now?
Right.
So basically everything that we just talked about, bro, to me, I see in that.
Yeah.
I see in God, like I see in Jesus, I see in those stories.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, damn, you're kind of right. Like, even if this man, whatever he was, because I'm still like, when he's telling me this story, I'm processing it as like, God's not real. But damn, you're right. You know? And I'm like, as I hear this shit, like, you're right. That dude was the real superstar. And then I've never seen Jesus Christ Superstar, but in my head, I imagine that better be what it's about. You feel me?
Right.
Because it's like, that shit is hard.
Yeah.
Like for someone just to be like, yeah, this is me and you could kill me for it and I'm still going to rock with it.
Right.
So
right.
That's the shit. Like to me. And then to top that off, man, I was just like, I started looking. So then after that conversation, I started getting my noodle cooking. Right after that, I went to this pizza spot. And there was these people praying over a pizza, like a few tables down. And I was just like chilling, eating pizza with my homies. And that shit looked hella crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but you joined?
No, but I was like in my head, that's me. Why do I think like I'm better than like, because I'm giving this conversation like I'm too smart to believe in that silly shit. But it's like low key. I'm that guy. Like, I'm the guy that'll be talking to some shit you can't see in the corner and believe it. You feel me? Like, I'm the dude. Like, I am that crazy. Like, I want to believe in magic in this world. I'm not too smart to believe in magic. I'm not above believing in fucking majesticness, bro. And magic and something greater than me. Like, I'm not above that because I don't understand it. And so... And then, dude, I got baptized, all my shit got stolen, and my life has been the dopest it's been ever since.
Really?
So I gotta believe it. I can't explain it to you exactly.
Where'd you get baptized at?
In the Pacific Ocean, bro.
Yeah?
It was so tight.
Nice.
It was tight.
A church out here, then?
No, my homie Danny did it.
Oh.
Bro, that's the thing. I'm not on some weird shit.
Yeah.
I'm not, I go to a couple different churches that are cool. Like, this one, Zoe, is ran by this pastor, Chad Veach.
Yeah, right.
Super dope. You got like that's my main church that I love. But like,
are these like mega churches or what?
No, it's like weird, like little like hipster churches, I guess I'll call it.
Yeah, right.
But they're fly as fuck.
Yeah.
The pastors say shit where you be like, what?
Yeah.
Is this allowed?
The pastor's like, okay, so now Jesus is gonna dab on him.
Yeah, no, dead ass. Dead ass, bro. Dead ass.
Shut the fuck up.
I swear to God. I swear to God.
That's so
like it's so tight. He'll be like, every prayer at the beginning, like the open prayer thing or whatever before he gets in the sermon, at the very end he goes, I'm in and make sure the Lakers win.
Oh shit.
And like people who never been just be like, what the fuck is going on? Like we not at
He's
regular
like, okay
church.
Now we're gonna read from the hymnal, got my sandals on but they look like sneakers.
I don't know, man. No. To me, I like, to me, yeah, exactly. So for me it's just like on some real shit, a relationship with God. I don't really know about religion. I don't fuck with religion, but I do believe in God, bro.
Yeah.
And that
you know, it's funny, the angle that you take with Jesus being a superstar, in some sense, it ties into what I was talking about with like this sense of nihilism that I've kind of developed of acknowledging the void and kind of like all the isms. Like a lot of my friends are workaholics, you know what I mean? A lot of my friends, they try to fill their void with fame, you know, like clout, like having more followers, people tell you how dope you are, how great your creations are. Like that's a certain just type of...
That doesn't fill the void
right,
at all.
Right, but it's this validation that they seek, and part of it is like creating this legacy. Like, what are people going to remember me for? And I think part of the my self satisfaction now is like I don't give a fuck if people remember me anymore because I'm like how fucking crazy and how much hubris do you have to think that like you're important enough to be remembered? And really, when you look in the grand scheme of things, the history of modern society, one of the few people to be remembered for that fucking long is your boy Jesus.
Right.
Like,
and to be real, like, because
he's one of the few that created a long lasting legacy, even though it's been crazily distorted over time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's the other thing. We can't trust man with that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we don't know really like what's up. But I'm just saying all I can say is through the Bible, really, more than anything, I've been able to tap into some shit that I've never tapped into before.
Yeah.
And that's just my experience.
That's
like,
good, man.
So but I mean, yeah, like. Honestly, like, whatever
Have you ever read Zealot?
No.
There's this book called Zealot where this man, I forget the author's name. He's like a talking head on a lot of news shows, but he's like a religious scholar. He basically paints a humanistic portrait of what Jesus probably was actually like. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like according to 25 years of research that he's done and stuff. And it's very interesting just like that the – you know, it paints like kind of the sociological structure of what was going on back then and what probably actually happened. And it acknowledges that like this is a real human being and here's like likely his real story. Because in the Bible, like those were tales that were created over time and it was kind of like a game of telephone where things kept getting more and more kind of distorted as the Gospels were written. By the time it got to like whatever the latest one was, like Mark or whatever, like all of a sudden Jesus went from like this normal human that was claiming to, that was the Son of God to being like all of a sudden he was, you know, created or he was a virgin birth and all this shit. And like that wasn't until later, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting, Zealot.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like again, for me, like I'm not the dude because I'm super in the beginning of my journey, so I can't even really like I wish I could go even harder right now, but for me it's like, to be real, all I can really say is I believe in magic.
Yeah,
that's it.
There you go.
You know,
Wes, I think we did it. I think
I'm not gonna lie, we this guy a little deeper than I thought it was gonna get.
That's all we hope to do here is like get a little below the surface. It starts off slow, but then you know, if you find the magic, then you get into it. You know what
next
I mean?
Time I want to talk about Orange County as much.
My bad. I like to find out people. It's like this: if you can get
shout out La Habra, though.
If you can get to the origins, then you can get to the future. You know what
deep,
I'm saying? Like you
deep.
Can get to the present. And so
I feel like we, man, it's like who is along? Who we get to talk? I'm gonna come back and talk more. I got more.
Let's do it. Hey, when you're like extra famous, come back and bless us. So
has that happened yet? Have you had someone return?
Not really.
Yet?
Like I think we're so early in a lot of people's journey that once they get famous, it's kind of like they don't come back. You know what I'm saying? Because like we're still
so early.
Yeah, we fuck with people early. You know what I'm saying? So like when you get somebody that's like starting to touch like fader covers and all that, like they're not gonna come back and do this because it doesn't matter anymore. But I'm glad that we got to touch them like while on the journey up.
I'm coming back, baby.
Yeah,
coming back. This is, can I say, man? I've seen a lot of kind of neat just from researching my like favorite new artists I found this dude and like for the most part your videos are one of the first things that come up if
you're
looking for a new artist which is dope. And when I found out that like I was coming today it was like I told my manager Ryan, I was like, oh, we part of hip hop history. Like, it's
yo,
a piece,
man, thank you.
You know,
that
and
gave
that's
me a
real
little bit
to
of
me.
Spine tingles. I appreciate
right?
that.
No, real shit, dude. Yeah. Like, I mean,
yeah,
we were talking about it earlier, all these different people that have been through here, so it's special, and I appreciate it.
Yo, thank you, man. That means a lot to me. And you know, as much as I talk about, like, nihilism, like, yeah, this is part of the legacy that I'm creating. Like, if I were to die tomorrow, people will talk about this, and I could say that I'm very proud of it, you know?
Yeah.
So, thank you, man. I appreciate it. So tell people, okay, you're working on what, Pretty Words, you said?
Pretty Words,
Pretty
baby.
Words.
Yeah, next, it'll January. Come out in January.
So very soon after you hear this, be looking for West Period.
The EP.
Go.
And then check out we got Big Bag out right now with
amazingly
the video.
Catchy song.
Thank you.
Earworm for certain.
Yeah, thank you. And then another one called Trap Star, and there'll be a few more on the EP, so I'm excited and keep on the lookout, man. Squad Thick.
Amen.
The whole crew.
Amen.
Clifton, Francois, Dad Attraction, EV, and Nate. Let's go.
So I don't know who any of those people are, but I have a feeling that I will soon know who some of them are, and then I'll go, oh, wait, now I know how I heard of you because Wes shouted you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's how it worked
that's
last
how it
time,
worked
right?
last time.
All right, that's hard. All right, hell yeah.
So
pay it forward, y'all.
Yeah, always pay it forward. Ride for your crew. All right, man. Tell people where to find you online.
At West Period, WESPERIOD on everything. And then it'll be / WESPERIOD on everything else.
As you guys know, my name is Lee. Some of you might know me as Intuition. You can find me online at It's Intuition. You can find my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, based with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat. That's on Instagram. That's on YouTube. That's on motherfucking Twitter. That's on everything. It's It's at Kinda Neat. Go to patreon.com, patreon.com/kindaneat to support the show. Pledge $1 per episode. It helps us keep the lights on. You could donate some motherfucking Bitcoin if you want. I'll put my Bitcoin wallet. You feel me? That's my new hustle. Send me 0.0001 Bitcoin.
Get that Ethereum. Get your Ethereum popping though.
I'm not going to tell people how to invest here, but I don't fuck with Ethereum personally. But you know, if you believe in it, believe in it. But yeah, cryptocurrency, that is like every conversation in LA right now revolves around that. It's so obnoxious, and I try to never be the first one to bring it up, but when people bring it up, I'm down to talk.
Let's go, baby.
What else? YouTube.com/kindaneat, where you're going to see West Period performing Big Bag.
Hey.
Getting money like my daddy.
What the hell?
Anyway, I think we did what we came to do, and I appreciate it. That conversation was fantastic, and I needed it today, so thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
That was Wes. My name is Lee, and this was Kinda Neat.
All right, dope.